From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the flurry of news leading up to and after the inauguration of President Trump. President Biden broke his promise from 4 years ago and issued blanket pardons to his own family members. With just 2 days before the end of his term, his team sent out a press release declaring the Equal Rights Amendment to be an official amendment to the Constitution, which was a position swiftly ignored by Biden's own legal team and his archivist. Meanwhile, incoming President Trump issued a new meme coin, a Trump coin, a piece of cryptocurrency that is so useless in practice you can't even try to use it as actual money, and yet its price soared, making Trump a crypto billionaire overnight. And if that's a normal and healthy practice for, as if I should say that's a normal and healthy practice for a new president, Trump asked his own supporters to watch the inauguration from a nearby arena, while the richest people in tech sat front row at the inauguration. And then Trump pardoned everyone convicted of crimes on January 6th, including a number of people who attacked police officers. To say that the norms are changing is an understatement. Trust in institutions is at an all-time low. Trump knows it, and so he's not waiting for institutions to act. He's moving unilaterally on issues like birthright citizenship or throwing out the TikTok ban, despite it passing Congress and being affirmed 9-0 by the Supreme Court just last week. Trump supported a TikTok ban 4 years ago, but now he sees TikTok as a way to shore up support among young voters. Meanwhile, Americans are generally optimistic that the next 4 years will be good ones. A new CBS News YouGov poll shows that Americans in every age bracket are optimistic about the future under Trump. And the most optimistic Americans, at least in the adult categories, it's Gen Z. They really like Trump. 67% of young voters feeling good about another Trump presidency. My guests are returning to the program after an abbreviated visit on Monday. We're talking about how they see the issues facing this new administration and the country. We'll take your feedback this hour. You can call the program, of course. You can also join the chat on our WXXI News YouTube page where the show is airing live. Hello there. And let me welcome our guest this hour. Luis Martinez back with us, a management consultant, former candidate for New York State Senate. Welcome back to the program.
Buenas tardes.
Good to have you here. And welcome to Richard Dollinger. Rick is a retired judge and state senator, among many other roles in this community. Rick, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be here. I just have one question, Evan, right at the start. What did WXXI do to the weather? It's zero out.
I know. I'm wearing the thickest sweater I own. It's a cold day.
I listened to the weather report on WXXI, and I count on it, and it seems like they're plunging that temperature lower and lower. What's going on?
It's temporary, Rick. Come on.
It's Rochester, warming, right?
I'm not getting into global warming right off the top. We're not doing that. Let me start with this, and I mentioned this on Monday, but I want to at least start with this. Luis, I look at the numbers of optimism in this country,
yes,
and Trump is on the good side of every age bracket, but especially among younger voters.
Yes.
Younger than you and me.
Yes.
But yes, every age bracket is over 50% optimistic. Why do you think that is?
Because they have a future. They see a future. And the future can be accomplished through the American dream. When I ran for office, I ran on the American dream. Not on regulation, not on taxation, not on inflation. I ran on the American dream. Here's what I think I mentioned this to you. Actually, I actually mentioned his name. His name is Dennis, and he is one of many young men literally pushing a stroller at the North Winton Village Fair, where I approached all these men who were pushing strollers, and that was my most receptive audience. If I approached older, mature people, I got some people shoved my business card right back at me. So I said, well, I'm going to go where I can make some difference, where I can show them some hope and a future. And that was my best audience, young families. That was my audience.
Well, so that's reflected in these optimism numbers. But let me also ask you, are you comfortable, Luis, as someone who's supported this president with this new meme coin, becoming an overnight billionaire? People can literally just give money to a meme coin that they can't use. I mean, it's like giving money to the president. Is that something you're comfortable with?
No, I don't like that.
You don't like that?
No. Nope. But that's, you know, it's just like there are things that your spouse does that you may not like, but that doesn't mean that you cancel your spouse, you know?
So that doesn't rise to the level of looking around saying, boy, everything looks like a grift now. Everything just looks like
a
nightmare.
Well, I wouldn't use the word grift. That's up to the viewer. But what I'm saying is that there are some things that he does that I don't like. But most of what he does, I like. And that's how it was for Democrats for Biden or Harris, I'm sure.
I don't know. Rick's about to tell you what he thinks about the Biden administration.
Right.
Judge, I'm going to back you up before the inauguration. In the last 72 hours, it was an active last 3 days for President Biden, starting with a flurry of pardons that 4 years ago he said he wouldn't do. What do you make of the pardons?
Well, I told you before we started, Evan, I'm not a big fan of pardons, period. I never liked the pardon of by Gerald Ford of Richard Nixon. I thought he should have been held accountable.
He said he wanted to heal the country.
Well, he didn't. What he did is he left a huge scar on the country and its notion of presidential accountability. That's what he did. And as I described it to you, if you run through the last 40 years, you see Reagan pardoning everybody involved in the Iran-Contra thing, Bill Clinton in his midnight pardons, which everybody says was a result of too much alcohol or some other thing, in which he pardoned, among others, Mark Rich,
yeah,
who was one of his contributors. It was awful. It's an awful abuse of the power of the presidency. For Joe Biden to do it after he promised not to do it, I think is just terrible. I also think pardoning a member of his family, Hunter Biden, was a big mistake as well.
What about his brother?
I wouldn't pardon his brother either. And I know that the reason why I did it is because President Trump has threatened to go after everybody. But I don't excuse that as a justification for it, and I don't excuse President Trump pardoning everybody, including those who beat up police officers on the Capitol steps.
Well, a lot of the time with pardons, we talk about, like you say, the midnight pardons, the last-minute pardons. This is a first-day pardon from President Trump, and there was new reporting this morning, and maybe the team can help me find it because I want to cite it. It's not my own. But there was deliberation in the Trump administration about, do we do it sort of ad hoc? Do we look case by case? And he kind of got tired of it and said, blanket pardon, 1,600, everybody who's got convicted of January 6th, they're all pardoned, all of them. What do you think?
First of all, I think that's abysmal. And I think that the Republican Party can no longer claim to be the law party. They might be able to claim to be the order party, but they certainly can't be the law party when they completely ignored it. But here's the other thing. My concern about the pardon power is that the combination of immunity for the president, which the Supreme Court invented on its own, no constitutional—
last year.
No precedent for that.
In the immunity case last year?
Correct. And what they've said is the president cannot be charged with any crimes and cannot be held accountable for what he does in his presidential capacity.
Official business.
First and foremost of those is to pardon, which is a tremendous power. What if those pardons were bought and paid for? What if Trump or his family was somehow, and I'm not saying it happened, but I certainly think some other future president, or even this one, might do it.
Or Bill Clinton with Mark Rich.
Right. What if they're selling those pardons in trade for campaign contributions or much less money for their family or future considerations for development or whatever? I think that strikes at the heart of accountability in the United States. And I worry that the rule of law, the concept of what law is all about, is under fire.
Before I get Luis's take on some of the pardons, let me just follow up on that point there, Judge. Is there a mechanism that you see that would reform presidential pardons, or is this the system we're going to see for a long time to come?
I'm a constitutional guy. The Constitution says that the president has the power of pardon. There has never been a limitation on the president's power of pardon that I'm aware of. When you combine that unlimited power with the notion that he's immune— that's part of his official duties. I don't know how you get from that to there should be some limitation on the pardon power. Unless it's a constitutional amendment, I don't see how it stands. I do think that is a tremendous threat to the notion of government accountability. If you can pardon, as President Biden did, Pete Buttigieg, who's his Secretary of Transportation, I don't know that there's any evidence nobody's ever claimed he violated any law or committed any crimes, and now he gets a pardon? Are we going to be in a world in which the President of the United States grants a blanket pardon to everybody who ever worked for him, no matter what they did?
The point on Buttigieg, the point on, I think, probably Liz Cheney, among others who got these pardons, is an interesting one because I don't even know how this applies. Take Buttigieg. Does that mean for the rest of his life he can't be charged with a crime? I don't understand exactly.
No. The pardon would be retrospective.
Retrospective to anything he's already done, it cannot. Okay. But it's, I guess I grew up in an era where you're getting pardoned for things that you were convicted of or being prosecuted for, not for anything that you might have done, but you haven't yet been. I mean, it's a very strange.
Evan, I want to go back. Luis has probably heard this before, but there's an old tradition in the Catholic Church. It's called a plenary indulgence.
Sorry.
And when you get a plenary indulgence.
That's even more scholarly.
Well, when you get a plenary indulgence, you like wipe out all your sins. And it's, I can never forget the great debate when I was in grammar school about, is it retrospective or prospective? If you get one, does it apply to the future? I think in these cases, these pardons simply say, what you did prior to the pardon, anything that you did, you cannot be prosecuted for a federal crime. Still be prosecuted for a state crime.
I think Robert Ludlum wrote about plenary indulgences being sold by the Vatican in one of his novels. Might have been in Road to Gandolfo. I have to get a look at it.
That was a huge issue in the Protestant Reformation, was the selling of indulgences and plenary indulgences.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm sorry for diverting.
Yeah. All right, so Luis, let me just back up. On the Biden pardons, 4 years ago he says, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
He does it. I know you're not surprised. What do you make of it?
Well, it's obvious what he's trying to do, protect his family, because if you recall, one of the first impeachment accusations that was made is when Trump made a phone call concerning what was going on in Ukraine, and he was impeached for that phone call. The phone call involved his brother and the criminal enterprise that they were beginning to launch at that time. So, but getting back to a couple of things that were said here, jumping back to the Catholic practices, I've not been a practicing Catholic, and I've been in the Methodist Church and a Protestant church since I was a child in Cuba. It may sound strange, but it is true. And so in reference to pardons, there's only one pardon, is Jesus Christ on the cross, and all the rest is just us chatting with each other. But the other question was about the pardons. You asked. If I like some of the things that Trump does. For example, I don't like, you mentioned law and order, so I'll start with order. I would have done the J6 people in jail as an orderly process. Let's examine the situation, okay?
Case by case?
Case by case. That's what I would have done, okay? If I was responsible for that practice, I would have suggested to the president, let's do it in an orderly fashion so that we don't have the kinds of comments that we heard from the judge. And so I would have done it that way. Now, we may find some things in there. But by the way, I think that the J6 trial hasn't taken place yet. What went on in the Capitol was just a clown show, and I have a lot of reasons for that. But so the trial of this, of what happened, not only at the J6 riot, and also later in the Capitol, that mess will be tried in public using information that was censored heavily by the Biden administration, Liz Cheney, and all the rest, and even information that has been just destroyed. Okay, so this will come out. You're going to ask me, well, what exactly? Well,
it's destroyed.
So this will come out, and I'm not prepared to tell you because no one knows exactly what it is.
But you seem to be concluding that there's some nefarious.
Very nefarious. Okay, very nefarious.
But you don't. But you also say, I don't have evidence of it, but I know
will,
it's true.
We will have evidence as time goes by. Remember, this has been hidden. We did not know. You know who really turned this thing around? It wasn't Trump. It was Elon Musk buying Twitter, which is now X. The most, and as he says, you are the media, and I hope that we come back to serve the legacy media because I got a lot of information about that. So X is now the media. If you want to know if something is right or wrong, you go look for it on X, and you will get not the media, you will get the opinions of people who know something about the topic, and then you can choose, you, sir, can choose whom to believe and then chase the truth. Because that's what it's about.
I'm just having a hard time following. You're saying that we're going to get the truth about January 6th.
We
don't know what it is, but
exactly.
We know that it's worse than they've told us.
Exactly.
But we don't know. I don't know why you can say that without evidence.
Because the evidence is beginning to come out through places like X. But you have to be patient and go there and find it.
Okay.
And other sources. But that's where it's displayed. If you want to know what's going on, go to X, and now you get the latest updates.
I'm trying to follow this, but
yes.
Let's come back when that enters the realm of reality. And let's stay in reality here.
Okay.
And let me just talk a little bit more. I want to credit, thanks to the production team, for pointing out it was NBC News who reported this morning that so two things were going on in the last 2 weeks. J.D. Vance, the vice president, at the time the vice president-elect, was telling people the J6 pardons are going to come, but it's going to be case by case. And anybody who attacked somebody, physical violence, that's not going to be condoned. People who attacked police officers are not going to be pardoned. And then I think Trump, tired of that, according to the reporting, two officials who worked on his transition team told NBC News that the decision to do a sweeping pardon was made just 2 days before the inauguration happened. They said that the pardon surprised many in large part because Trump and Vance had signaled recently the president would take a surgical approach. So now it's 1,500 people. Now it's people who attacked police officers. And you seem to be saying that was a mistake?
Correct.
Okay. Although the trial may show that
you don't have, see, if you operate under the assumption that the whatever was presented, I won't call it evidence, whatever was presented during the J6 show, that's what it was, that is it, the 100% of all, then A, you're mistaken, and B, you're going to find out you're mistaken.
Well, here's one thing I feel confident saying.
Okay.
We can move forward as a country and not appreciate how close we were to something truly ghastly. If they had found and injured or, God forbid, killed Mike Pence, we'd be in a different place right now.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, there wouldn't be talk of pardons. There wouldn't be a Trump administration come back to the White House if Mike Pence had been killed like some of those people were trying to do.
Okay, but remember that thousands upon thousands of rioters burned and looted and killed people during the BLM riots, and nobody was, tell me all the people who were locked up and, that. So there is that level of crime against the nation that the Democrats celebrated and encouraged. And there is evidence of that,
sir. So I'm not going to defend every individual action in relation to the George Floyd story.
Exactly.
That's a whole separate conversation. I take the point that you saw what happened in American cities. You were horrified.
Including Rochester, New York, made national news with their rioting in Rochester.
It's not clear to me why you're invoking that when
because
I simply say that if they
riot,
found and killed Mike Pence, we'd be in real trouble as
a
country.
Well, that is true, but at the same time, we were in real trouble, and nobody, especially the Democrats, were doing anything about it at the time. That is patently true.
Okay, so let's move on from J6 here, and I want to...
Can I just make one comment? And this is where I disagree with Luis. I do agree with him that the surgical approach would have been much more
absolutely
appropriate. But
but
we're not there. The other thing I want to mention is this notion that something has not been disclosed. All of the criminal defendants in the January 6th, everybody had an absolute right of disclosure.
That is false. Your Honor, that is not true.
Due respect, Luis. As a lawyer, as a litigant who's been involved in these cases, and as a judge, they have an absolute right to disclosure to anything other than national security stuff. I don't know that national security was raised as a defense to discovery in those criminal actions. But those trials were all occurred with full disclosure as a matter of law, and they were all upheld on appeal. So the notion that there's some secret information out there that would reverse those actions of people beating up on cameras, police officers in the Capitol. I understand that story is out there. I think it's complete fiction. We'll find out.
Please note that I want to be here a year from now and with your honor and
you're
show
welcome
you
back.
What's,
sure.
what's going to come out.
I'm
saying that
back
with a smile because with a smile in the sense that it's true that things happen that have not been allowed to be presented during the show, the clown show that took place called the J6 trial.
The
trial has not happened yet. It will happen.
Can I just say one thing? If law and order means anything, it means that we cannot refer to criminal trials that occurred in the District of Columbia involving people who attacked the Constitution and the government of the United States to be called a show trial. These are not comparable to what happened in the Soviet Union or in communism. This is the American justice system. And if there are people who don't want to abide by the justice system, so be it. That's the reason why I agree with Hakeem Jeffries. There's a political party out there that doesn't abide by the rule of law, period.
Okay. I'll be back, and we'll talk
back.
About it.
Luis,
thank you.
I look forward
we have a
to
date,
that
sir,
opportunity.
And I'll pay for lunch.
And believe me, if I come back with egg on my face, I'll be ready.
Okay, sir. It won't be about egg on your face. It'll
all
be
right.
about the facts.
All right. Let's just proceed as if this is going really well, and let's move on, if we could, to I want to talk about some of these initial orders here and get beyond J6. Because we kind of knew that was coming. It was more sweeping than we thought. But certainly we knew the president was going to move quickly on the southern border. We knew it would be likely days within the start of what we could see deportations, which were being reported now. And I don't have the latest in the last day or so. This is from a couple days ago, that the new Trump team could start in Chicago with deportations, that they are very serious about that. And that the Trump administration, that President Trump even sending an order to revoke birthright citizenship, which is enshrined in law. So that's somewhere where – so if you're just joining us and you're just meeting Luis Martinez, Luis's story as a Republican who ran for New York State Senate, as a local business management consultant, as a native-born Cuban who came to the United States mm-hmm. and is a big fan of legal immigration,
you
say,
mm-hmm.
I know that this is an issue that was very, very central to you. What about let me start with birthright citizenship. Did you expect the president to go after birthright citizenship?
Well, birthright citizenship, the way it is in the United States, is unique, extraordinary, exceptional, and I think the only one in the world. Let me give you some background just so you – when I worked for multinational companies, I had what they call expats, expatriates. These were employees that worked for our company, and in order for us to develop them, they would leave their home country and go to another country. They'd go from Brazil to Mexico, from Mexico to Canada, from Canada to Holland to learn more about the business. At one point, I remember I had 68 people like that traversing all over the world. When those employees, with their family, wherever they were, if they had a child in that country, that child did not have birthright in that country. That child was an American or a Brazilian or a Mexican or wherever they came from, but they were not, just because they were born in that country, say Holland, were not Dutch citizens. Come back to the United States, and we have what are not commonly referred to as anchor babies. You know, an illegal alien crosses the border, gives birth. Now we have an American citizen that becomes an anchor baby, and then everything wraps around that anchor baby in order to expedite, if you will, transfer from their country to the United States. Well, I yield to the judge concerning the actual language of that law and so forth, and I don't know how difficult or easy would be for President Trump to cancel that or to change that. That I don't know. However, the intent to make that like every other country, like that I'm used to working with, yes, I would be inclined to agree with the intent, although I don't know the process.
Okay, and before I turn to the judge, is this something that you expected to see?
Not in that kind of a just kind of like an executive order or something. I think if it is true what they're saying, that it's enshrined in law, then there's a long process, you know, that may have to go through the entire Congress and all that. And somebody used the word constitutional, so I yield again to the judge on that one. They used the word constitutional to describe it. And I said, well, then if it's in the Constitution, I don't remember where that would be. But that's that again. I'm not an attorney.
But you seem to be saying that part of the issue, in your view,
mm-hmm.
is what happens in practice is someone who is undocumented has a child here.
Right.
And that changes everything about that family.
Yep.
And the United States ends up in service with benefits, support, et cetera,
yes.
for this family, and you want that practice to end.
Yes,
okay.
Unless there's some, you know, extensive circumstances. Let me explain something about immigration so that people don't say, oh, he's anti-immigration. Again, I have worked in multinational companies. I have recruited top talent from organizations in Mexico and Brazil and Canada and so forth. I know the talent that we lack in the United States. And I know, frankly, where to find it, especially engineering talent, which is what I used to do. And yet, that talent must come to the United States legally, as we did, and as many millions of others want to do, 12 million, 10 million, who are waiting for their turn to come to the United States legally, but they have been abandoned. They have been sandbagged because they were allowing illegal aliens to come in. And please ask me why they allowed illegal aliens to come into all these blue states, and I'll answer that question.
Okay, but let me actually back up first, but because you mentioned that if you go around the world, you don't get birthright citizenship like you
not
do
Not to
here.
My knowledge. I've never seen it.
Okay.
And they some people claim that the United States is unique. It may not be, right?
Unique is not the right word. I've got a list of more
go
than
ahead.
30 countries.
That allow birthright citizenship?
Yeah. It's actually more than that. This is from the Library of Congress. Albania, okay. Angola, Angola, Antigua, and Barbuda, mm-hmm. Argentina, Australia, mm-hmm. Bahamas, Barbados, Belgium, Belize, Benin, Bermuda, Bolivia, Brazil, British Indian Ocean Territory, British mm-hmm. Virgin Islands, Burkina Faso, okay. Cambodia. I mean, do you want me to? I mean, only
yeah,
on
you
the
can.
Sea. I'm only on the
I'm
seas.
Just saying. I'm just saying that we do what is best for us, the United States, and then other people can do whatever is in their best interest, just like you do for your family or your neighborhood. There's nothing wrong with that, and there's nothing wrong with saying we have to either eliminate or maybe that's not the right word, maybe address the birthright issue in a constructive way. I'm good for that.
Okay. Let me ask the judge if you want to weigh in. Rick, birthright citizenship, let's start there. How do you see that issue?
Well, first of all, before I start, I want to commend my co-speaker here, Ooh. Luis, who came to America, has realized the American dream, and I applaud that.
Thank you, sir.
Well, it's an achievement, and there are so many families that you've been a part of, and our nation has been built. So we're all immigrants in that extent. So
Thank you, sir.
I applaud that. Let's go back. Birthright citizenship was enshrined in the United States Constitution in the post-Civil War period. What it was designed to do was to take African Americans who had come here, who had been denied citizenship under the Dred Scott decision, and to give them citizenship, all the benefits of citizenship. And what it said was, if you are born in the United States, you are automatically a citizen. It's in the Constitution. No president, by executive order, can change the Constitution of the United States.
Correct.
We don't allow our executives to supplement their judgment for the judgment of the Constitution. We actually don't even allow the United States Congress, in conjunction with the president, to pass a law that is inconsistent with the Constitution. It's not what we do. The Constitution sets limits on the power of government. Birthright citizenship is a part of the United States. In my opinion, it's part of what we did to make the United States exceptional. After the Civil War was over, we did something truly exceptional. We went back and said, those of who were brought here as slaves are now citizens if they were born here. Mm-hmm. It was one of the most remarkable things we did in America. It made us exceptional. I don't care what the rest of the world has done. I agree with Luis that there's always this question of the birthright citizenship being passed to someone whose child is born in the United States, even though they're not here illegally. I get that. That's a real mm-hmm. dilemma. We've got to figure out how to deal with that. But what we don't do is take away the citizenship of the child who was born here, who has the protection of the Constitution to be a citizen of the United States. The interesting thing about the immigration promise, I thought it was fumbled by Joe Biden, closing the border, sealing the border. I actually have a proposal which I've floated to other people. It's just mine. If I had been the president, I would have closed the border, and I would have ordered that anyone who is here illegally be deported. I think that's fair. But most of the people, there's a huge number of people who are here legally who sought asylum, who filed for asylum. My understanding is there are millions of pending asylum cases. And what I would do to deal with the issue that Luis got, which is why are we not processing those H-1 visas for people mm-hmm. who we would want to bring because of their mm-hmm. skill level? Mm-hmm. Part of what we need to do, if I were the president, I would have closed the border. I would have said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to hire a whole bunch of retired judges, not me, but other retired judges, to get the backlog of asylum cases out of the way, to yes. cut them down, declare a 2-year moratorium on the granting of any visas to come to the United States, wipe out the mm-hmm. asylum backlog so that we could then say we can entertain new claims for asylum or new H-1 visas, and mm-hmm. then we can deal with the issue of those who have come here illegally. I will say this. I am not, and I don't speak for the Democratic Party or anyone else, but if you came here illegally, you are subject to deportation, in my opinion, irrespective of whether you committed a crime. Mm-hmm. You violated our laws to get here, mm-hmm. and under those circumstances, you shouldn't be here.
Yep.
That's all there is to it. And I understand mm-hmm. how people who are, you know, chased by gangs in Mexico or Honduras or Cuba, mm-hmm. for that matter, I understand their impulse to come here. It's a humanitarian impulse, and it's a humanitarian impulse to welcome them. But if the only way we can do that is to break our laws, I'm a law guy. I just can't condone that. And I think that at some point you say, if you're here illegally, you broke the law to get here, you got to go back and apply legally. That's the rule of law as I see it. And until Congress changes it, that should be the rule.
But, Judge, I think there's two things that are two stories that are actually similar, totally unrelated, that indicate what I think we're seeing very quickly with the new administration. They know that declaring birthright citizenship gone is going to court. They know that.
Yes.
They know it's in the Constitution. Right. It's in the 14th Amendment. They know it's been part of the long legal tradition. And they know that to win that, they got to go to court. But it's an end around any legislative process. And in mm-hmm. the same way that 4 or 5 years ago, one of the first people on the national scene to call for a TikTok ban was Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. His acolytes, TikTok ban, TikTok ban. Joe Biden becomes president. Congress passes a TikTok ban. Bipartisan support. Joe Biden supports it. The Supreme Court decides 9-0. There's grounds for a TikTok ban. But Donald Trump, who now wants to be the savior of the youth vote, says, nope, it's fine. TikTok come back as long as the company puts right there on there, our thanks to great leader Donald Trump. And all of a sudden, it's like a law that passed, that was passed by Congress, signed by the president, upheld by the Supreme Court. Doesn't matter.
But
we have an end around going on.
But just remember, why did they do it? Why did Congress pass that law after a series of hearings? And the answer was that China was using TikTok
Correct.
As a tool to invade America's national security. They were gathering
obtaining
secret.
Data. Yeah.
They were obtaining data on yes. American citizens. It was a threat to national security. And at least based on my recollection, Democrats and Republicans said, we're in a contest for world power with China.
That's right.
We cannot have the Chinese using their TikTok platform as a tool to undercut the national security of the United States. That law should be enforced today. And with great respect mm-hmm. to the current president, he may be the best deal negotiator in the world, but we need to get rid of TikTok in China's hands. It's stealing
Correct.
Our data
Correct.
That we need in the technological war with the Chinese. Stop it. Congress said stop it. The president Right. of the United States said sign it. We need to stop it right now. The Supreme Court upheld
it. Trump wants to be the savior of it, so it's still available. I mean, Luis, you seem to think that this is a bad move.
Let's use order, okay? And the order is, the last time I looked, Kevin O'Leary, the Canadian businessman, offered $28 billion for TikTok. I don't know where that offer went, but what he wants to do is take it over. By the way, I've never been on TikTok. I barely.
Neither have I,
Luis. I can't even spell TikTok. So all I'm saying is that there are people who want to buy it. I also heard that Elon Musk may want it. I don't want Elon Musk to get TikTok, okay? Just like I don't want Zuckerberg to have WhatsApp. And if you ask me, I'll tell you about WhatsApp.
Luis, you and I agree WhatsApp. On both of those.
Yes. So I don't want Elon Musk to get TikTok. Somebody like, okay, Kevin O'Leary and his group, whatever, they're fine. I want things to be unbundled now. Google is too powerful. You know, Zuckerberg is too powerful.
Too much concentration of economic power.
Correct. And because these are messaging, you know, apps and all of that, there's just too much control under one tent. So I want to see more diversification, if you like the word diversification of media like that. So back to, we agree that I lost track of, you know, who said what to whom, but the point is that last time I looked, Kevin O'Leary wants to buy it. Of course, he would remove it from Chinese control, mm-hmm. which we agree. And because it is a tool for the Chinese to just invade. By the way, I don't use things like Alexia and all that for the same reason. And I always turn everything off when I'm, you know. So my point is, a lot of things end up in China that we do as a normal course of living. And TikTok is the most, the top of the scale there.
But doesn't it trouble you that the new president, who once supported a TikTok ban, doesn't care that it passed into law, that the previous president signed it, that the Supreme Court 9-0 affirmed it, but he wants to be the savior, so the it's
ban.
Fine.
So the ban, I think he's saving it, to use your term, saving it for somebody to buy it, but I don't know the details, okay? That's the way I see it.
But you can take the thing offline until there's a buyer.
That is true.
And, okay. And if you did that, if you took it offline, the next buyer will pay a discounted price, right, Louise, to get it back
or
on.
Something,
I mean,
yeah.
it affects the value of it going forward, whether it's on or not.
Right. So we agree, and the end point is that I want somebody else to own it, not China, and I think there are people lined up to own it, and the rest is details.
But Trump says
I'm with Louise on that one.
Trump says he wants the United States government to have a stake in the future ownership of TikTok. Do you want the government to?
No.
No.
No, the last thing we need is the government prying into everybody's business.
You're They've agreeing got a little more tools. Than we thought this hour. We are way late for our... No, that's okay. We're allowed to agree.
Oh, yeah.
Now.
Oh,
we can't disagree on everything. We're way late for our only break of the hour here. We'll take a little bit of your feedback on the other side of our only break. We are talking to Luis Martinez and Richard Dollinger about their views on Inauguration Week. What's going on in Washington and some of the implications. Let's take this break. We'll come right back. Coming up in our second hour, we take a look at one of the specific executive orders signed by President Trump, an order stopping the refugee program. It takes effect on Monday, and it's unclear exactly how sweeping this is, but it certainly appears to affect thousands upon thousands of people who have been cleared to come to this country, including many children, and including some Afghan citizens who served the United States during war. We'll talk about it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So I've got a pile of emails from listeners who are feeling like the one thing that we are not addressing effectively enough when we talk about the concentration of economic power, mm-hmm. when we talk about who has the power and the influence, is who was on stage at the inauguration. So, Luis, you don't want Musk to own TikTok. You don't want Zuckerberg to own WhatsApp.
Correct.
Because there's already enough concentrated power.
Correct.
Are you concerned that the wielders of those concentrated power were all there on the stage with the president at the inauguration?
Yes, but for different reasons. Okay.
Okay.
So
let's
pick on Zuckerberg for a minute. He confessed out loud that it was the Biden administration who really leaned hard on him to cancel and censor information concerning COVID. That is true. Okay. And and at that time, Twitter was not allowed to do any of that either. And again, Mr. Martinez, do you lean left or right? No, I lean to the truth. And if that bothers you, I'm not your problem. So what I'm saying is that a place like X, let's just pick on X today, is a place where you can go discuss all of these details to the gnat's eyelash level and get truth, or at least things that appear to be true based on, you know, community notes and things like that. So that's a source of viable information. That was not available to us during the COVID. It was not available to us during the lockdowns and all that. So we need to appeal to those sources of information. And then we the people decide, who's telling the truth and to what extent, what are the consequences of following one line of thought or another. That's up to us.
Rick, you want to add to that?
Well, the only point I would dispute with Luis is the Biden administration did certainly go to the media companies, but they weren't concerned about information. They were concerned about misinformation, things that were scientifically untrue, conspiracy theories that had no facts to support them. And under those circumstances, the Biden administration said, we stand up for truth, but this stuff that's being circulated on all of these platforms is patently untrue and misleading. And so I look at it, and I will suggest, I'm always leery of government censorship one way or the other, but when there's information that says ivermectin or whatever they call it.
Ivermectin.
Ivermectin is somehow the solution to your COVID problems. That is misinformation that misleads America and puts people in a position where they're doing something that's dangerous to their public health rather than improving it. But and that was science, our science all indicated that. My point is this. I do not want the United States government involved in these organizations. I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on any of these things. I don't trust them. And my view is it's just the worst possible voice ends up getting the most play. And I think that's reprehensible in a democracy.
Okay.
May I respond?
Yeah, go ahead, Lewis. Yep.
Okay. I'm sorry, Your Honor, but I disagree. There's
That's
no
okay.
Such
Don't
thing.
Apologize for disagreeing
There's no such thing, sir, as disinformation or misinformation. Let me give you two examples on the ivermectin topic, just one. Okay, just on that one. There is a surgeon I know who, during COVID, he had a store of ivermectin for himself and his family that no one else could reach because he's a surgeon and he could do that. That's item one. Item two, there's a person that I know personally who ended up in Highland Hospital, a woman, and she was they wanted to intubate her and all of that during that in 2021, I think it was. And we had prayer vigils outside the hospital during that time when everybody's wearing a mask.
Are you going to say ivermectin cured her?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so, Luis, listen.
Wait, let me finish story.
No,
let me finish.
We're not going to go down the ivermectin road.
There you go.
No. I don't want to censor. Listen, the story that you're describing,
yes.
I would affirm it and say I am grateful that this person, I hope, is doing well today.
She's alive and well and doing great.
That is wonderful.
Yes.
What I'm talking about in scientific studies, this has been done and done and done and done. And ivermectin is not a cure for COVID. It's okay to say that. We can affirm that this has been studied by people who don't have ideological stakes.
So the surgeon doesn't know what he's talking about, does he?
No.
Here's my point. Evan, I did not mean to divert this into a discussion about the COVID and cures.
Thanks a lot, Judge.
I know, I'm off topic. please censor me and tell me to get back on the topic. Let's talk about Trump and where we're going.
Okay.
But where we're going is RFK Jr. is going to be in charge of a lot of public health. And
yes.
RFK Jr. is going to take a lot of public health to the woodshed here. I mean, we're going to see some real, real change, assuming that he has his way. We could see change to vaccine policy really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Are you comfortable with some of what you're saying there, Luis?
I'm comfortable with vaccine. I'm not comfortable with babies getting up to 62 vaccines by the time they're 3 years old, that sort of thing. So, and plus, there are people in my family who are healthcare, credentialed in healthcare, and the ingredients of many vaccines today are very, very, very questionable. And yet, the problem is that even if you identify that and you want to act on it, oh, wait a minute, they have immunity, those pharma companies. So there's something has to change. Now, is RFK Jr. the best agent for that change? We could have an opinion about that. But something has to change. We can't keep doing the way we've been going all this time and have all these things that we can witness all around us and say, oh, well, that's the way it is. No.
Hold on a sec there, Judge. I mean, I take your point that pharma is powerful.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very, very powerful.
Impregnable at this point.
Concentrated economic power is doing very well right now. And I think that RFK wants to break up some of that power.
Yes.
I think that everybody can see that.
Mm-hmm.
I also wonder when you say things can't keep going, I don't want my kid to have polio. I don't want to go back to a world before vaccines.
But see, that's exactly the reaction that we get when we say we need to change, how we do things. And it's like, oh, we're going back to tuberculosis. No, that is not true. We certainly could. No. Why would any of us want to agree with that? That's not the point. The point is if I have, I mentioned 62, whatever it is, 58, 27, it doesn't matter. The point is it's too many. And then you have to, if you line them all up, and then you have experts. Remember, what we want is not experts. What we want is a debate among experts on these topics. And that debate has not existed on that topic. I want to see clearly debates between the people who are pro this and the people who are against that. And let's hear what it is. And then we will decide. We, the people, will decide. Who's telling the truth? That has not happened on any of these topics.
So can I just offer one more idea here, Luis? I'm with you that if society gets to a point where the experts are not even allowed to speak or debate,
right,
we're in trouble on any topic, not just vaccines, on nuclear war, on all kinds of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
your implication is that that debate hasn't happened.
It has not happened, sir.
When in the scientific community, the development of vaccines happens very carefully, rigorously.
The medical journals have been leaning to the left, and only to the left, for at least 10 years. Remember, I have people in my family who are in the health field, and it is abominable what, you know, the Lancet and the New England Journal of Medicine, the travesties that they have perpetrated, especially during the COVID season, that now they're going to be held accountable.
You're vaccinated, aren't you? Did you get vaccinated?
Do I have to answer that question?
No, you don't have to. I'm happy to talk about it, but okay. You certainly don't have to answer it.
No, I'm not answering that. Okay. So the point is that there have to be true referees in this fight. And in the last 10 years or so, the things that used to be the referees have taken a side and have neglected to have not only neglected, forbidden the opposition to have a say in vote.
So your view is that the new administration, RFK helping lead this, mm-hmm. will bring better referees and more debate.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's what we want.
Judge.
I couldn't disagree with Louise anymore on this. The debates about the quality of vaccines in the United States have been extensive. They're extensively probed when they're manufactured, when pharmaceutical companies show up and ask the FDA to review it. What Trump and others have criticized the FDA is that the process of approval is too long because you spend too much time studying these vaccines. We ought to be able to get them to market quicker. The legitimate debate about what goes on in vaccines among highly reputed scientists on the left, the right, the center, all over the world, this debate has been going on for years. And the notion that that somehow leans left, when the fact is America's vaccination of children has substantially reduced almost every single childhood disease for the last 50 years, starting with the Salk vaccine against polio, with the shots against measles. The history of pharmacology helping our children is extraordinary. We are the leaders in the world. We are the exceptional country in the world. Why anyone would want to tinker with that process and say, wait a second, there's a scientist out here in England who says that autism is caused by the childhood vaccines. He publishes a story. It takes over the right, and they say, oh, this is true. Autism is caused by vaccines. 5 years later, after extensive study, they order the physician to retract the article, and they strip him of his medical license because it was all a fabrication. I agree with Luis, there ought to be an extensive debate, but the notion that vaccines are put in public without extensive debate in the United States is pure polycock. It's not true in any
sense.
That's the first
polycock we've ever gotten on this program.
I'm sorry. I know I'm going down.
You're reaching for the...
I'm sorry, Evan. I'm diverting it. I shouldn't have started this debate on investment.
I'm trying to think of what the term should be.
So, Your Honor, please look up Marty McCarry, Dr. Marty.
All right. I know him well. I read his book.
Okay. And he doesn't agree with you at all, so you may want to check it out.
Dr. Peter McCullough does not agree with you.
Let me get some feedback here. Dallas says, we're in trouble if we're not allowed to question the experts. I agree. Luis agrees. Mm-hmm. Rick agrees. You have to be able to question the experts. Have to be able to. That is not at all where I am on the subject of vaccines, and I don't want anybody listening to this program to be under the impression that there is something nefarious or not understood about vaccines. They're extremely well studied. Not every vaccine is the same, but I am grateful to be vaccinated. I'm grateful to have a vaccinated son. Ooh, I don't want to go to a world where we're not vaccinating.
Well, again, there is we're talking about two different things, sir. Do not paint me with a brush that I'm against vaccines. That is not what I said. That is not what RFK said. What I'm saying is that there are some things that have happened in the last 5 to 10 years, especially in the last 5 years concerning COVID, that are unprecedented and nefarious, both,
right,
sir.
RFK has said that vaccines have done a lot of damage to children.
Well, let him say that, and then let him back it up.
I mean, vaccines have saved so many children from horrible disease.
You're talking about vaccines like the vaccines I had, like the inoculations that I had. I remember distinctly standing in line when I was 11 years old in Cuba waiting for my vaccine to come to the United States. I'm not talking about that, and neither is RFK, okay? So let's not paint, I'm not painting you with that brush. Please don't paint me with that brush.
Okay, well, Don, 30 seconds apiece to finish up here. We've covered a lot of ground. Clearly, there's going to be passionate debate going forward here. Mm-hmm. You said at the start that you are very optimistic about the next 4 years.
Yes.
4 years from now, give me 30 seconds of your most optimistic. What has changed in this country?
That my children and the adult children that I have now and the next generation behind them, because now I'm a grandfather, will have the same kind of United States of America that my parents and I had when we came to the United States and we learned to speak English and then we achieved the American dream. That's what I want for my children and grandchildren.
Okay. Rick, 4 years from now, what do you expect?
I hope the United States is got the world's most prosperous economy, that our inflation is at 2.9%, that our employment rate is at 4.5%, mm-hmm. that the Dow Jones increases in value by 30%. All of those things happened under the presidency of Joe Biden. If Don Trump can produce the same kind of economic growth and economic vitality, I'm all in. I hope it doesn't come at the cost of our civil rights and the rights of other citizens, including the birthright.
Thank you both for being here. And when the J6 trial happens, I guess we're coming back.
Yes,
but
I'll be back.
Between now and then, let me just say thank you for coming on and joining the conversation. Luis Martinez, who's a management consultant, he has run for New York State Senate. I think everybody agrees, Rick having served in the Senate, anybody who takes the time to run for office is doing a service to their community.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being here. Richard Dollinger, former judge and state senator, thank you for being back here.
Thanks for having me,
Evan. Talk to you again soon. And listeners, hang in. We've got more connections coming up in a second.